And welcome everyone to another edition of Adventures into Sovereignty. This is your host, Rebecca Cope, tonight, and I am joined by intrepid co-host Michael McCracken, who has worked with Andrew Bartzes for quite some time. Have to tell you that Andrew has taken a sabbatical for a day or two and will be back with us another time, but Michael is going to join me as our co-host tonight in Adventures into Sovereignty. Welcome, Michael McCracken. How are you this evening?
Well, hello, Rebecca. Thank you. And hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Adventures in Sovereignty.
Wow. Don't you just love his radio voice? He is definitely one of those cool dudes who's been doing these shows for a long time. And it's just my pleasure to get to interact with Michael tonight. Michael is up in one of the coldest places on the planet. He just got through telling me that one of the days this week, it was the coldest place in the United States. So he is there before the fire, and I'm here in sunny Florida. And so we're going to give you, the first thing we're going to do is to give you an update about Rod Class today, because this is the 21st of November, and it is my pleasure to tell you that Rod Class was released from his ordeal in D.C. today. He is definitely with his friend in D.C. and will be on his way home to North Carolina, from my understanding, tomorrow. We don't have any of the details yet, but we are just so relieved that Rod has been at least out from under this ordeal that has been going on within the D.C. court system for the last year and a half. We do not have all of the details. We'll look forward to an update from Rod as he gets back home and gets into recuperation and is able to tell us what went down. But the good news is that he is home, and or at least on his way home. All right, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, that wasn't me.
Okay. Well, we do have other guests with us tonight, and we've all been talking about, you know, those of us who study the law and legal aspects, we all sort of get into a way of just, it sort of has a way of taking over your life as you begin to understand what's been going on behind the scenes. And that's the real big story with this Rod Class DC case, because there has been a group of researchers, a group of layman researchers, that is, not bar attorneys, who have followed this case from its inception. And we thought that we would be able to hold these people accountable to the rule of law. And the thing that has really emerged over this year and a half is what Michael and others have learned just some time ago, that it's absolutely impossible to do that. So what we have been doing is absolutely exposing the way the courts are set up, so that we have to find ways to correct our status. We have to find ways to deal with these people outside the dominion of these corporations posing as governments who have taken over our courts. So as we've been dealing with the Adventures into Sovereignty show over the last 6 months period, we've been talking a lot about what goes on behind the scenes in the court. And Michael and the two guests that he have with him tonight bring such a wealth of knowledge, having studied this from the principles of sovereignty for the last two decades. So I'm going to bring Michael in, and really he's going to host the other two guests, and we're just going to have a lively discussion tonight. So Michael, you're on. Let's hear from it.
Thank you, Rebecca. Tonight we have some really good guests tonight. We have my buddy John and my buddy Christopher down in Florida, down where it's nice and warm. And I'm more than a little bit jealous of those two fellas. But, we've all been, had our shot gone through the ringer, every one of us. I don't know of anybody that I've met in recent memory that hasn't been abused by this court system and by this corporate government system.
Say something, you're going to hear on the radio.
And, you know, when you're in the thick of it, and you're trying to figure out how you can protect yourself from them, there's just, you come to a realization, at least I did, there's just nothing that I say or do is going to matter. They are going to do what they're going to do, and we have to do what we have to do. And in the end, it's not going to be pretty. But, yeah, so I'd like to introduce my guest tonight. John, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
John, tell the world a little bit about yourself, just a little bit.
Well, I went to school to be an attorney and got halfway through, and thanks to Rod Klass bringing it out about House Report 3123, 1950, 52-page report that the American Bar Association, that all attorneys are affiliated with through, they'll try to brush it off that I'm only, say, the Marion County Bar Association or the state of Florida. But the bar is the bar is the bar is the bar. When you go look in Black's dictionary book under Temple and Templar, and it tells you who they answer to right there. It also, if you can read between the lines, tells you that they are Knights Templars. They're secret society, which is what Kennedy was talking about, this country was eat up with, and which is the big problem of this country. But when I read that they were the lead runner of the Communist Party, I quit immediately, because there was no way, because what all of us Americans are taught, or I guess we are, I went to the public school system and was lied to the whole 12 years, and they told us that the Constitution was the law of the land, and that's it. Well, as I found, and being a communist was definitely not part of it. So as I found, I just couldn't continue with it, but I still, anybody that comes into my house, it ain't a house, it's a law library. I got more books than most libraries, but I still look for, the truth is first off, but the remedy for what's happened at first, I mean, when we go through this, we go through a stage and we're just pissed off at the world and we want to go out there and choke, say, the cop on the street. When I finally figure out it wasn't the cop on the street's fault. He might be doing some stuff that he probably don't even understand why he's doing. I finally look at them as my brothers and sisters now, and I help them and do what I can, even in situations where it's not, because again, what we were talking about before, you become a belligerent if you don't try to sit there and help and be a peaceful inhabitant, which is searching through things. But that basically sums up. I went to be an attorney and couldn't, and I could get a little deeper what started it, but anyway.
In fact, John, didn't they try to have you get in trouble for practicing law without a license?
Yes, the Florida Bar came after me out of Orlando, opened up a case in Sumter County, and held the kangaroo hearing over in Citrus County. And the first thing that I asked those clowns was, or told them, and asked at the same time, I will show you my license to practice law when you show me your license to practice law. And there's plenty of
okay
cases good. Out. Excuse me?
That's a good way to put it, John. A very good way to put it.
Well, I also went in there. Of course, it's all contract. The courts are not lawful courts as we were taught back in the public school system. They are private bar guild courts. And when you follow the trail, it all leads back to the Vatican. They are nothing more than Vatican cult churches. That's it.
Yep.
They answer to the crown, which is not the queen. It's the ends of court, which is the bar. which stands for British Accredited Registry or Regency. There's several different interpretations of it, but what the bottom line is, they answer to the Crown, and the Crown answers to the Vatican. And it's all through the Knights of Malta, your secret societies, what is it, Knights of Malta, the Society of Jesus.
And the Vatican answers to Satan.
Well, yeah, that's what they... And all churches, and I don't want to bust nobody's bubble out there, but there is not a church that is a 501c3 or the corporate church that doesn't answer to the Vatican. That's because they go to the state for their their corporation tax exemption is what most of them try to push off on the people in the church. But the bottom line is, you don't have to go to something that the people created, the state or the government, for that matter, that used to exist prior to 1861, but they are answering to a Walmart on steroids, a corporation. It says it in Title 28, Section 3002, Paragraph 15A. And then when you look in Florida statutes, under 679.3071, Paragraph 8, it tells you the location of the debtor is what 679 chapter is in Florida statutes, but what paragraph 8 tells you is the location of the debtor is, and who it is the United States, which is located in the District of Columbia. So why in the world would anybody claim to even be a U.S. citizen when a U.S. citizen, Florida Secretary, I got a hold of the Supervisor of Elections office and demanded a definition. They sent me back, signed it in blue ink, stating that there was no definition for the U.S. citizen in the Florida statutes or the Florida Constitution. Therefore, it doesn't exist in Florida, and I'd have to talk to Homeland Security. So there's so many scams. It's unbelievable. The rabbit holes, when you think you get to the bottom of one, another one falls in. It just goes and goes. I kind of lost my train of thought there.
But boy, isn't that the way it is. And those of us who get caught going down these rabbit holes, it gets to be a never-ending maze of deception and lies until we really wake up and just realize that it has been a matrix of illusion that we're all caught in. And we begin then to ask the question, why are we going down these rabbit holes? What can we do as peaceful inhabitants to declare peace and get rid of these people who have declared endless war on us? And that's been a large part of what we've been involved with as we've been working with New Earth Nation under the working with Rod Class and the source documents that he's been pulling together that go into this in enough detail to where we can literally trace it through the congressional record, through the acts, and you know, we have what we call black ink on white paper that begins to make sure that anybody who wants to study this can prove just exactly what you have been saying for themselves, that these are corporations posing as governments, that there is no lawful and legitimacy behind it, and that our law enforcement has no more standing than a security guard at Walmart. That's, you know, right. More and more people are beginning to wake up to these facts and beginning to ask a lot more questions. And then the next question is, okay, my relatives or my family, you know, somebody that I know has been put in jail by these actors. What can I do about it now? So that is a large part of what this program is about, is asking those questions and giving people some of the answers that show them the direction to go in their research and as they look for answers.
Well, let me read something here out of the preface of one of my U.S. Code annotated books, and this is in pretty much every preface except I found in Title 42, which the U.S. citizen, the fiction, has civil rights. The man has, and I don't even know that really rights, because when I look back on some of the documents that the kings, when they talk about rights, they spelled it R-I-T-E, not R-I-G-H-T. So there's a lot of things that I look at with, but what this preface says is this code is the official restatement in convenient form of the general and permanent laws of the United States in force December the 7th, 1925, now scattered in 25 volumes, i.e. the revised statutes of 1878 and volumes 20 through 43, inclusively of the statutes at large, period. And it said, here's a good point. It says, no new law is enacted and no new law repealed. It is prima facie the law. It is presumed to be the law. The presumption is rebuttable by production of prior unrepealed acts of Congress at variance with the code. And then it says, because of such possibility of error in the code and of appeal to the revised statutes and statutes at large, a table of statutes repealed prior to December 7, 1925 is published herein together with the Articles of Confederation, the Declaration of Independence, the Ordinance of 1787, the Constitution and Amendments, and index tables of cross-references of the revised statutes at large. And it goes down, what it's telling you is those are the laws, and anything prior to December 7, 1925, no new law has been enacted and none have been repealed. So it's all a rebuttable scam from that point on.
Well, as soon as they tell you that it's prima facie evidence that they go on, the prima facie evidence is nothing but assumptions and presumptions. They do not come up with a single fact. They're doing everything. It's all bullshit and balderdash.
Yeah, but you
have to rebut it.
You have to rebut it. That's right.
If you're a registered voter, you signed an affidavit stating that you were a U.S. citizen, that those people down there know doesn't even exist in the very state or county you're in. So they are perpetrating a lie, fraud. Yep. And it just keeps continuing. But until enough people finally throw that voting crap, stop that crap. Why are you voting for Walmart?
Well, plus we need to bring actions like impara delecto, you know, an equal fault. That's, you know, how that goes is the term is used with reference to an exception to the general rule that illegal transactions or contracts are not legally enforceable. Thus, where the parties to an illegal agreement are not impara delecto, the agreement may nevertheless be enforceable at equity by the innocent or less guilty party. Now, as I look over the course of the years and what the Bar Association has put in place, I don't see how they could ever be the less guilty party with the fraud that's been committed against the whole world. And like you said, John, they said the word right, R-I-T-E. It goes further on to prove that it's all spiritual warfare.
Yep.
And with that, I still have to introduce my good friend, actually my best friend, Christopher.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Christopher.
Been sitting here listening to what you've had to say. You were talking about a court of equity. People go in and they say, well, we were following the law, we were doing this and doing that. Well, a court of equity is a court which determines what is fair. Yep. And that throws the whole ball into the judge's lap to determine that. And there is
no jury.
Fair, you know, it's whatever the judge determines to be fair. See, you've gotten into, we as Americans, I shouldn't say you, we as Americans have gotten into all these quasi-contracts and relationships with government to obtain benefits. They consider them benefits. We might not. And because of this relationship we have with government, it creates what they call a constructive trust. And you can end up as a trustee, which means you have all the liability. You have to take care of it and this and that. And the state, actually, the way these trusts are set up, it is the beneficiary. You think you're the beneficiary, you get a piece of the action with Social Security and such, but the state is one reaping the lion's share of the Social Security Trust Fund. And anyway, I digress a little bit here. Let me tell you a little bit about how I got started in this whole brouhaha. I was about 21 years ago. I was at work here in Florida, and two different guys came up to me on the same day and said, "Hey, do you know that income taxes are voluntary?" And man, did that get my attention. And that particular weekend, I happened to go to a seminar, and the guy was doing it about trusts and this and that, and I didn't know anything about the law at that time. I mean, absolutely nothing. I was going along to get along. I was a good little doobie paying the taxes, you know, and filling out the W-4s and the W-2s and the 1040 EZs and everything. And when I heard that, I just stopped paying. And I started getting forms in and putting them in with my employers, which they weren't very happy about, and I don't think any employer is very happy about, because the guy really caught in the middle. When you're doing the right thing is the employer, and you don't know enough to sue him, and 99% of the time you don't really want to, because you're going to end up losing your job over a few bucks. So you're the one who generally buckles under when that occurs. And it's hard to go work for somebody else, you know, knowing what you know at this point in time, once you get a little bit educated and proceed with there. Well, needless to say, it was about later that year, back in 93, I left that job, and one of the reasons was because of this thing with the IRS, and I decided to go to paralegal school. Well, I ended up at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida, and I graduated third in the class, and the thing that they did wrong was they taught me how to do legal research. And I know where to find things. I know how to find things. And people will say, well, it's really a maze. And it truly is an absolute maze to get into a legal library and try to find stuff. But the thing is, there has to be a methodology, because then nobody would ever be able to find anything. So I could find stuff. I could do legal research. And I started reading all the books and everything, but I really got my education. It's like you said, Becky, on doing your own self-education. I was probably about 15 years ago, a copy of Blackstone's commentaries on the internet that had been scanned. Needless to say, at that point in time, when you get a scanned document, it's all gobbledygook, so I reformatted it all, cleaned it all up, and about this time somebody comes out with a printed book on the internet, which really pissed me off, but that's the way life is. Anyway, I took a lot of work on that. I'm still working on it. I took the book, I formatted it in HTML, I got it on my website, and I started going, the way I learned about the law was I started going through that book, and I started linking every legal term to a Bouvier's 1856 law dictionary and copying it. So I read the law dictionary I don't know how many times. I read Blackstone I don't know how many times. And then the stuff started to finally sink in. And it was all about, in my way of thinking, it was all about legal fictions. Things that don't exist. A legal fiction is really only an idea on a piece of paper. It's like a corporation. Take Ford Motor Company, for instance. Ford Motor Company is only an idea on a piece of paper. The buildings might be owned by Ford, the land might be owned by Ford, the lights might be paid for by Ford, but Ford Motor Company itself is only an idea. It's a legal fiction. In reality, it does not exist. That's what they call an incorporeal hereditament or intangible property. It's just like stocks and bonds. You can't really own a piece of a corporation. You have a stock certificate. It's an idea on a piece of paper. And this is what you got to wrap your mind around. That was explaining before we started, the birth certificate is your stock certificate, so to speak, for your estate. And you've never claimed it. You've never owned up to it. It's called a person. You as a man or woman, we think of ourselves as person, but that's not what the legal system views it as. It's an artificial thing. And that's what you use to interface with government. But you can't use it to interface with government until you reach the age of majority. And as I was explaining before the show started, there's a Minnesota Rule of Court 220 that says you need to get an authenticated copy of your birth certificate through the Secretary of State in the state you were born in and attach an affidavit to it and claim it for your own. Then, and only then, have you ever reached the age of majority, and this is why you get your butt beat when you go into court and you are told by the judge to hire an attorney, because the attorney has to represent you as a minor, and you're not even aware of that.
Now I have a question for you, Christopher, if I can. What is the difference in an authenticated copy of your birth certificate from the Secretary of State and a certified copy from the local health department, which is what most of us are familiar with? Is there anything in these regulations that define the difference in that?
Okay. When you order a birth certificate, you can get, there's a couple things, and maybe I don't know everything about this. You can get what they call a long form or a short form. There's also a thing called an abstract of a birth certificate. And then you have a hospital certificate. The hospital certificate you will only get from the hospital. You're probably given one copy if you're ever a kid, if they still make them anymore. I don't know. I've seen one. I personally don't have one. I've never known of me having one, me or my brothers or sisters ever having one. It's the document you get from the hospital, has your little footprints on it. Normally the state birth certificate does not have that. Now, what they will get you at the state is, if you just request a birth certificate, you'll get what they call the short form. They'll cut a little bit of the information off the document. Then you can have a thing called the long form. That's when you have all the pieces and parts to it. On mine, I had a part where it listed at the bottom where it showed how much I weighed and how big I was in that, and that's generally cut off. So what you want to do is order a registered birth certificate from the local health department or the state.
It's called a certified copy.
Certified copy. Yeah,
what we get from the local health department is called a certified copy. Yeah. And all that means is that the registrar has stamped it with her seal saying that it's official and signed it.
Yes, that's correct. You can get that from the county or you can get it from the state vital statistics. In my case, I was born in Ohio. I would get one out of Columbus. I could get one out of Lucas County, which is also Toledo. That's the, what you just said, it was a certified copy. Now, when you want it authenticated, you take that certified copy and you go online, and in my case, for like the state of Ohio, there's a document you can download from the Secretary of State's website for authenticating documents. And you just fill out, it's a real simple form, put out your name and address, what you want it for, send them $5, and they'll have the address on there, and they will send you back a cover sheet that has a riveted cover sheet with it with a couple of ribbons. And what they're basically authenticating is the registrar's seal from the vital statistics. in that particular state. And when you're done with that, so now you got the birth certificate, now you got the authentication from the state, and when you're done with that, you send that off to John Kerry, U.S. Secretary of State, to get a federal authentication on it. And when you get that back, then you can go out and get make an affidavit and do the same thing. Have it authenticated at the state, have it authenticated at the federal level, and paperclip it to your two authentications with the birth certificate. And now you are, now that you're 65 years old, you finally turned 18. You should go out and have a birthday party.
And this is exactly what we talk about on the shows when we've been talking about the difference between a private citizen and a U.S. citizen. Some people call it the American state citizen, who is the peaceful inhabitant on the land, as distinguished from the U.S. corporate citizen that you're talking about when they go through the registration process for a voter registration. And I want to speak about that just a minute, because my local county where I'm from is a small enough county that there is a separate room, and it's not in the courthouse, it's in a separate place where the voter registration is kept. And there are these files upon files upon files of people who have filled out the voter registration card, thinking they're doing the greatest thing in the world to vote for their officials and everything. And so just the absolute attention that is paid to things like the birth certificate and the voter registration should be a major clue that we should be paying attention. And you know, that was one of the things that really made me stop and notice when I had to go into the voter registration for a different reason, you know, long after I had been on the voter records just to check it out. But there's another thing that I want to call to your attention, Christopher, and ask if you have ever seen the registration certificate that was used by the plantation slave owners in the South to see how much that resembles the exact same process that is used by these turkeys to register each of us. Because I became convinced after seeing all those records that we have volunteered into servitude for these corporations posing as governments without us ever realizing that's what was going on. And I'm sure you're already aware of that. Most of us who seem to get into this research and go into it that way seem to get through that understanding before too long.
Part of what this revolves around, John and I and Michael, we ran into a few guys here a couple of months ago who had just like we stated earlier, they'd gotten their heads handed to them in court proceedings and spent 10 years researching all this stuff and came up with a pretty good angle on it, I feel. And it gets into the ancient Roman term called usufruct. And basically it stands for use of fruit. It's what happens when you're using someone else's property. And we, as Americans, are still using the king's property. This country, the Revolutionary War, most people don't realize, it ended on a capitulation. That was an agreement to stop, which meant that we went back to the status quo of being a British colony. The whole reason the Revolutionary War was fought was because, just like they said, no taxation without representation. We had our own government here, but the king was trying to tax the American colonies without anybody sitting in the British Parliament in order to finance his wars with France. That's what they got all ticked off about, a few pennies. And here we are so complacent today, they're taking, you know, 60, 70, 80% of our money and we don't do anything about it. But then again, most people don't know what to do about it. Anyway, as this continued, this whole thing has always been about the money. I don't care how you slice and dice slavery, whether you hold somebody in chains, whether you hold a gun to their head, whether you fleece them out of their money from taxes, it's all about the money.
If they
can take your money, the money is your energy anymore.
That's what
forget
it is.
Gold. Yeah, forget yeah, exactly. Gold and silver. Gold and silver are now commodities and have been for decades now. If you could trade a bushel of wheat or a bushel of corn for your groceries, it's the same thing. That's how government now views gold and silver. Everybody wants to go back on the gold and silver, and there really isn't enough to go around.
Well, there is.
So, it's inconvenient.
Well, yes.
I mean, it would be nice, but it's truly inconvenient to be carrying, $500-$600 worth of gold coins in your pockets, and because it's cumbersome.
That's in a parity level with today's fictitious Federal Reserve note, because the parity back in 1913 of a $20 gold piece, 1 ounce of gold, was 20 paper dollars. Now it's 1,500 to 1,700 of them.
Oh yeah, exactly. Because that should tell you that the paper Federal Reserve note isn't worth the ink it's printed with.
Well, the gold is still the same.
The gold is still the same. You can parallel your house, your car, and all this stuff on a benchmark with gold, and it will be the same today as it was 30, 40 years ago.
And back in ancient Egypt, it has never changed. You could
buy a
good suit and tie or clothes back then, the same as you can buy a real nice suit, shoes, and all now. Same 1 ounce of gold will do it.
Oh, yes.
Gold, one outfit, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, you have to get out of that mindset of, like, the common law. And it's like you said, John. You said, we studied the Constitution as the law of the land. Well, that's true. It is the law of the land. That's what the common law was, a law of the land. We are currently operating under international maritime law. And that's the law of the sea, and that's the difference. It's like playing checkers versus playing Monopoly. We're not even in the ballpark if we're still arguing common law, because everything is under international law, under the law of conflicts, under private international law, and I think we were placed under private international law with the 14th Amendment.
Well, it actually was 1933 under the 49th U.S. Statute of Large, Section 3097, Series Treaty 881.
And if you really trace this down, then this is where we talk about the War Crimes Tribunal that the judges are holding when they're charging you, anytime they're charging you with a felony count. When it's not a civil case, if they have a criminal penalty attached, then this is basically under 50 U.S.C. War and National Defense as an enemy of the state. We're not dealing with constitutional law. Anybody who thinks that we are, hasn't gotten their minds wrapped around the real truth. And that's been a large part of what we have been doing on this show this year, is basically going into all of this in depth and detail so that people can begin to wrap their minds around what's been going on, because we are not taught this in school. It's just like you both said, you were not taught this in your legal studies, so that we, the people, are teaching ourselves. And to me, this is really just the story of the decade, as so many of us gather around these radio shows and talk and educate each other for hours on end, and we really bother to go in. If you have an IRS problem, I mean, I'm one of those people who has read the whole sections of IRS code to understand this. It's not impossible to wrap your mind around once you begin to get these ideas, and you can really go in there and trace it down, and you're going to find all kinds of things, how we the people are treated as chattel. We're talked about as if we're animals.
But you can see it
right in there. Yes.
Where we're making another big place where we're making a mistake is we are not we the people.
That's correct.
Telling this to people, and we are not we the people.
We the people.
Yeah, no, we are not a party to the Constitution. No. That's what you're saying, isn't it, Michael? We are not a party.
No, it's even
no,
the
that's part of it.
That's part of it.
The people are only referred to as the people in government. This is very similar to the British system. Over there, they have the British Parliament and they have the commoners. Well, here we have like the U.S. Congress and the citizens. It's the same thing. We are only citizens. We are non-participants. We are not the people. You look up the definition of people in one of the law dictionaries, and I saw it the other day, it said the people are those individuals who are represented in the prosecution in a court case. Are you represented by the prosecution in a court case?
Mm-hmm.
No.
No.
You're on the receiving end. That's the state versus you, or in some states they say the Commonwealth versus you, or the people versus you. The people are the state. The sovereignty of the king devolved, which meant it was given to the people who would run the government. If you're not in government, you ain't one of the people.
Yeah, but now see,
and it all gets traced back, but this all gets traced back to who? To the crown.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking the crown like in the queen. I'm talking.
It actually goes to the Vatican and one step even farther than that in Switzerland.
That's right.
Yep.
Exactly.
Through the city of London banking system.
When they incorporated under Title 28, Section 3002, Paragraph 15A, under Title 15, Section 1122, they lost their sovereign standing and completely.
Yeah.
And then you've got the 11th Amendment where you were talking about equity earlier, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah.
They haven't had equity has not been in this country since the judiciary or the 11th Amendment when it went into effect in February 5th of 1795. So we ain't never had a actual lawful courts, or well, actually back then it was lawful because the people were the jury and not in a box, because the box is the four corner rules that those people don't even, they're there, but they're not.
Yeah. Well, I think what's going on here is the fact that we have been duped by the legal system into making minors out of ourselves and never attaining adulthood and never claiming what we own. But the thing is, technically, we don't own anything. We only have use of it because everything is owned by the king, just the way it is in England. The king owns everything, and we only have use of it. So what you want to do is you want to be able to use whatever property you can by manipulating your paperwork properly, because, as I said earlier, you are using a, quote, person, unquote, and you don't know how it functions. You can't, I don't know, I haven't run into anybody yet who can sit me down and show me how the Social Security Trust Fund operates. Social insurance is a maritime contract, and that's what everybody has with a Social Security number. It's international Admiralty maritime law. This is why we get outside of the Constitution. This is how you can voluntarily contract elsewhere. What was that thing I sent you yesterday in regards Bolter? Where did I put that? I have a 1946.
Here well, the IRS code.
Here's a 1946 federal case. Just one sentence. The citizenship of a person who becomes a citizen at birth, that's us, must be deemed to continue unless he has been deprived of his citizenship through the operation of a treaty or congressional enactment, or by his voluntary action in conformity with applicable legal principles. So we have done something that may surrender our citizenship of who we truly are to some foreign jurisdiction.
Okay, so this is what you're talking about when you're saying the format that is used to create the status outside of this corporation by having the authenticated birth certificate. This is a real big clue to people how to become aware of your status and how to begin to correct it. So that you can start functioning outside of the parameters of these contracts that have been placed upon us, because it's an adhesion contract, and if you don't dispute it, guess what? You're under it.
Well, it gets back to what I was saying about usufruct. In using other people's property, in our case, we're using the land that's owned by the king, the state, whoever you want to put on it, we don't really own it. The dominion of this property is by someone other than myself. I have use of it, though. However, as long as I have that usufructory interest, I'm the one who takes care of it, pays all the taxes, maintains it, and does everything else. And the guys we saw a couple of months ago do a seminar about this. It goes back to ancient Rome. It's in the Justinian Code.
That's right.
And numerous times. Uh-huh. And the slaves held all the property, had the usufruct. The guy who put on the seminar, Boris, said that in 1760, it would have been King George III, gave his usufructory interest to the Treasury of England. Which meant what happens then is he went back and explained, if you look at the Declaration of Independence, the founding fathers did the same thing here in the Declaration of Independence. We pledged to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. They gave everything they owned to the United States. They didn't have any usufructory interest left, therefore they weren't taxable. And this is what these guys are doing. They're giving their usufructory interest back. Now, usufruct is only predominantly used in the state of Louisiana. Everywhere else it's called reversionary interest in a trust. But when you give that back to the United States, all the property now belongs to the United States and it cannot be seized or arrested.
Okay, and Rod, in his particular situation, carried this to the understanding that the state has claimed a copyright trademark on the name. Of course, we all get into these discussions on the name, and so you have to understand that the state has claimed ownership of our name. This is stealing the birthright.
No, it's their name. They made it. You don't have a name. These guys are going into court and saying, I don't have a name. Oh, and they're asking, well, what's your name? I can't tell you. It's private.
My name's private.
And that's correct, because when you get into divulging the interests and the secrets and the paperwork within a trust, you're not supposed to do that.
That's right.
But at the same time, then our parents were the ones who gave us that name.
Well,
so these people are definitely guilty, in my mind at least, of stealing our birthright when they claimed ownership over our names and forgot to tell us about it. So I'm not going to let them off the hook and say that was okay for them to do, because I don't believe it is.
If I give you something, you don't have to take it, and that's a given name. Well, that just because that's the name that was given to me, people may call me that, but that's not the name I've given me. So it's really, that's why I would go with the private thing.
Yes, I understand that. But I also understand the deliberate deception that has been done, because they haven't bothered to give us all of this information and tell us how to come into ownership or usufructory or anything else. They have left that as a deep, dark secret that's caused us all kinds of problems, including being put in jail over when no harm has been done, when no injured party actually exists.
Right.
But one of the things, though, whenever you're doing this this reversionary interest. You even give reversionary interest of the name.
You give them everything.
They come after you, then you just look at them and say, "Hey, wait a minute now.
It's not mine.
You're confusing me. You're confusing me, the man, the living entity, the man, with a government property, a government fiction. Please don't confuse the two, because they're not the same thing. That's why when you go into the court and a judge says you, well, the word you is a plural word. Now he just caught you up into admitting that you're both of them. You're the man and
the
legal fiction. That's how they build the constructive trust to trick you. Yeah. And you become the trustee and don't even know it. It happens so quick. It happens like that.
It does.
As soon as the judge says, are you Bob?
Yep.
Yeah. Are you Chris? Are you this guy? Are you that guy? It doesn't matter who they ask you.
No.
You know?
Now you just
attach the tar baby to yourself.
And the level of intimidation in the courtrooms around these issues escalated somewhere around, well, for us watching the situation with my brother, we watched it escalate. Anytime anybody came in and questioned anything, you were surrounded by armed bailiffs, you were escorted out of the courtroom, you were shackled. You know, there were just all kinds of things.
The time that I was in court and I wouldn't stand up, when they asked the defendant to rise and I didn't stand up, not only did they send the bailiff over there, and he's standing there crinkling his leather and, you know, his gun and all that stuff, they sent the... They sent a couple of other sheriff's deputies in there, and they're standing. And I refused to get up because I was not the defendant. And it just, they held it over.
Yeah.
And then, and then I went back the next time, and I would not stand up. I was not going to, and I knew I was doing the right thing, because when that young attorney says, I'm not going to be put in jail for this shit. he went nuts in court.
Yeah.
He was appointed to me, and I was like one of his first cases. And he was still really believing in what he was doing was the right thing, you know?
And Michael, think back now. You started talking about some situations that you faced as early as 1992.
Oh, before then, This has been going on for a long time. It's just that it's getting worse now. See, when I was a little boy, and my dad was a truck driver for a good period of time back in the 60s, and whenever all those guys would have, if one of those guys had a ticket and had to go to court, he'd go down to the truck stop and he'd get the other truck drivers together and they'd all go to court, and you'd watch the way things operated, and it was different than the way they operate in court today. At least back then, they gave you a fair shot. Now, when you go into court, they have the game down so much, and it's all about money. There's nothing about fairness there. It's all about how much, like Christopher was saying, how much energy and money they can steal. And
but see, the money doesn't change hands.
It doesn't.
With Federal Reserve notes, the money changes hands on paper with bond numbers.
That's right. That's exactly right, Chris. And so now, while they're doing all this to you, you know, The way that it's escalated over the, I would say from like 1973 when Nixon did his thing with taking us off the silver standard and all those judges got pissed off, it started getting real bad from then on. You know?
Well, and the point that I really want to make though, Michael, is the number of people who have now become aware of all this, because when we started so many decades ago,
well, it's touched
hardly anybody
lives.
Knew.
It's the reason that is because it's touched everybody's lives, and they turned the United States into a prison for profit place. That's all it is a prison for profit corporation. And if we don't stand up and turn it around, it's only going to get worse and worse and worse. we're at a period right now where we have to do something.
Yep. We have
it's like Chris was saying though. When we do all the paperwork properly and know who we are and are now in the age of the majority, and no longer considered an infant, that's what we individually have to do. Nobody can do this stuff for us. We have to each do it for ourselves. We have to each do our own due diligence, get together with groups of people or more, help your brother and sisters get over that finish line so that we can literally take back the world.
Yep, get over
in
the
a peaceful
fear.
Way.
Yes, in a peaceful way. Get all, over the fear.
All being peaceful inhabitants of the world.
Yep.
And once these ideals spread and people get the thoughts within their mind of just how free and wonderful this world can be, it changes your outlook on life.
You still have to have somebody who's got a little more of a direct approach than the roundabout, circular, helter-skelter methodology we have tried for the last 20 years, because I think like you and like John and like possibly a lot of other people on this call have done, they've tried every guru out there and every method, and a lot of this stuff has not worked.
Right.
So you have to tiptoe through the tulips and be careful of what you do and fly under the radar and all those other good phrases and not be obnoxious and belligerent and warlike with these people. You can't. I mean, I kind of shudder at this event going on in Ferguson, Missouri. When I read the news headlines a couple days ago that the governor had declared a state of emergency, it's like, this guy is reacting totally out of fear.
Yep.
And what else does he think is going to happen when you're acting out of fear? You attract that to you. He didn't go in there with any kind of confidence and saying, you know, we're going to remain calm and this and that. No, this is front page news. Everything's out of fear. You know, like Rahm Emanuel says, never let a good disaster go to waste or something.
Right.
You know?
Never waste a bad deal, right? See, and that's why we as adults, we have to stand up against that, you know, and say, hey, we can't be acting like this anymore. And we can't allow them to act like they're acting anymore either. Because all they know what they're doing.
Well, yeah.
You can't tell me for one second that they don't know and understand what they're doing to us and how they're doing it.
And aren't willing to do it with malicious intent. And we do have to realize, you know, because their retirement funds depend on them following the orders of their superiors. We just have to accept that that's fact.
Yeah. But yeah, when John and I did our show, John did a show with me last week on Wolf Spirit Radio, and we did it with Karen Hudis, and we were asking her about doing the bid the bond process to get Rod out.
Bid bonds.
Yeah. And
what did she have to say about that? I want to hear about this conversation. I didn't hear that one.
She went deathly quiet. I asked her if she was still there, and she said, yes, Michael, I'm thinking.
You're talking about SF-25 or SF-94? Which ones are you talking about?
You're sliding your hand into their hip pocket when you start.
That's right. Well, first you go in there with your birth certificate, then an SF-24 bid bond, then an SF-25 performance bond, and an SF-25A payment bond, then an SF-273 Miller Act performance bond, an SF-274 Miller Act payment bond, and then the SF-275. And then tell them you want that damn CUSIP number and you ain't going to take, you're just going to be there to get it.
Well, then you take a Form 56 and appoint the judge to be the special administrator and demand that he do it.
That's right.
You.
You have to get yourself an F-56 and appoint you as the executor.
Yeah, as executor, and then you can appoint him as a administrator. All this is about estates and trusts. If you don't understand estates and trusts, you are totally, totally lost.
Exactly. And this is a large part of what we need to do as far as beginning to establish these pathways for more and more people to start taking. Because it, just like with our peace treaty, you know, with New Earth Nation, we have actually put together a beautifully written peace treaty and invited the people of the world to sign that treaty to just say to the corporations, we are no longer willing to stand under the endless war that you have declared against the people and the planet. And just to stand under that peace treaty, you know, this is just one thing that we can do to begin to let the rest of the universe know that we are no longer willing to play this game that these self-chosen rulers have put out for us.
Ask the American Indians how that went for them.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand that too. I understand that too.
Now, see, here's another thing, though, that I have to say. Karen did tell us, and John was on call with me. Yep. Karen told us that Rod should do that. You know, it's like, yeah. But,
you know, wait a minute. Are you saying Rod should file all of the paperwork or should do what?
The peace treaty.
He's a belligerent. He's been fighting him. This is why they threw him in jail. They will throw you in jail for what they call protective custody for your own good. That's why he's in there.
Well, yes. And you all have to realize that he came under private status. If this is something that we haven't talked about, because once you become aware of all of this, you really do have to be quiet about it, and you handle yourself in a different way. And so he has been under that, and this is part of what the registered mail that they have refused to pick up, because they know what it would do to that case if they did pick up a lot of the documents that they refused to file in. Of course, this came in the private, and you all know what I'm talking about. So there was a lot of that going on behind the scenes that hasn't really come out yet. So there's more to it. But as we all begin to understand, you know, the difference in the private and the public. And you know, I'll never forget, as long as I live, watching the Monica Lewinsky hearings and Bill Clinton saying, you know, it depends on the definition of is. I will never forget that as long as I live, because I began to pay attention to words in a way that I had never paid attention to before. And that's really a lot of what we're all doing, as we're beginning to, as the veil of illusion is lifting, and we're willing to take responsibility for our own actions and to learn how to come to peace with this whole situation. So this has just been a delightful discussion tonight. And what I want people to take away from this show is how much people are beginning to educate themselves on these very methods. And there is a group out there that is so hungry for the deeper information that you all have brought out on the show tonight. And so, Michael, I just have to really say a great big thanks. It's getting close to the top of the hour when we would normally be off the show for tonight. So I just thank you all for this delightful discussion. I was going to leave it with Michael, but you all can see that I'm still here because I really do just really, you know, I enjoy the learning part of it. There's a lot to it, and there is a lot that we all have to take responsibility for.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank Chris and John for coming on with me tonight, because they know so much, See, we're not professing to know everything. In fact, the more I keep learning, the less I know. It's that. I'm at that point in life where it's like, you know, and when I look back and I think about how things were when I was first learning stuff, I'm like, oh my God, those poor people that are out there getting thrown into this thing right now that really know it, and the children. I'm talking about the people that are in their early 20s and stuff, and they're really impressionable, and there's a lot of gurus out here on the internet that are selling for profit these different programs that aren't going to do anything but get these kids into a world of hurt. And the one of the things that now Christopher, he always says, well, you know, we really can't do a show because we can't bring a solution. And he's right. We don't have the whole solution yet. However, we're getting closer and closer. And as the word gets out to more and more people and it spreads, maybe we'll have that 100th monkey thing happen. And overnight, we'll all have that cosmic delivery and the Akashic records open for us all. And there you go. You know, we're all up to speed. And the system of the way the things are going right now, that has to fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
It has to fall to the wayside just for the fact that the only way that it can operate is through cannibalizing its own. And anything that eats itself is sooner or later going to die.
You know, Catherine Austin Fitz calls it the tapeworm economy.
Yep.
And a tapeworm is that which absolutely destroys its the person that gives it the right to live. And yeah, that is where we are.
Parasites. And look at how many
government parasites is what they are.
Yeah, yeah, and look at how many good researchers that we've had out here that are out there spreading good information. And if they make a mistake and they're not sure of something, they'll say they're wrong. That's one of the things that I liked about Rod Class. That I've been following Rod since about his third show, and I always was impressed with the way that he dealt with things. You know, because he's not out there trying to sell you a bill of goods. He's sharing what he's learning, and if he finds something that he doesn't look at from the right angle, he'll get back on his talk show and correct himself. So you got to be in a guy like that's corner. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Well, the problem with Rod there is he's going into the statutory side, and there is absolutely, from what I've seen, other than just a few people getting through the cattle gap, there is no remedy in the statutes because it all operates just like Boris has pointed out under 1295A2, or the Title 50 Appendix 5B, and that's the Trading with the Enemy Act, your war powers, and that's what's operating it. And that throws it back into the Lieber Code, so we're still operating under. But then there is another side of that, which is the constitutional side of it. And there is that side still there because them people have, or they're supposed to, take an oath of office. And that oath of office is to uphold that law of the land, which is not their corporate. It is the de jure side, like Rod points out, about 12 hours every 4 years, that de jure door opens, and he is right on. But I think where Rod's, he's got such tunnel vision into trying to find the remedy in them statutes. I don't think it's there.
Well, the wrench
in the works also is the fact that they're operating in bankruptcy. That really feels twisted.
Thank you. That point, yes. Excellent.
And John, I think that this has been the most valuable thing that has come out of these researchers who have focused in on this Rod Class DC case with such focused attention this year, because we have all been able to prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that there is absolutely no remedy within these statutes and codes, and that these judges do not follow any of those rules.
And
they
they're
do
all
not
private
follow,
contractors, too.
Yeah, they do not follow the rules of civil procedure. They do not follow the rules of the local court. They do not follow the statutes and codes and their duties and responsibilities as laid out in those codes. We have been able to document and prove that beyond any reasonable doubt. And then as Rod then is going into the equity and trust side, just like Michael says, as he begins to get more of this knowledge, then what he has done is to bring in that statutes and codes side in such a way that those of us who have really followed all of it, we understand how the judges are using the Constitution in order to access these estates. Yep. And so we have all of that information now that we're able to put together in a way that it's beginning to make sense, so that a lot of the agents who have been working for these corporations and don't know that they're working within the corporations have started coming to Rod and looking at his research and saying, okay, now I can begin to put things together that didn't make any sense. And then now as we're getting this equity and trust side, that Christopher, you have done a smashing job of being able to explain so well tonight. I can't thank you enough. I mean, this has just been a delightful way to bring a lot of this information out. And so we can take this conversation to a different level with all of us as we begin to share, you know, around these radio shows and just around our kitchen tables as we deal with more and more people who come to us and say, how can I figure this stuff out? So I look forward to taking the conversation further with all of you as we all share and do just exactly what we are doing, putting together this in a way that the average person can take it to heart and know what to do, because that's the place we've all been searching for all of these years, so that we can help our brothers and sisters who are in jail and help start taking care of these parasites who have taken over our world.
Well, see, and another thing where with Rod and the statute side of things, if you read the Lieber Code, it tells us right in the Lieber Code, which we are still under, which we're still being ruled by, that our shield is with the International Law of Nations. So I believe that if Rod started looking in that direction, he would have more success.
Well, I tell you what. Okay.
This is why the 14th Amendment split everybody in America, made us private international citizens.
That's right.
It says the privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States. This is the interface with the corporate government.
Yes,
we as citizens had never achieved that level up until that point in time. But privileges, if you look up the word, the derivation of the word, are two Latin terms, privy and leges, private laws. This is why it falls under private international law, because the United States is an international arena.
Exactly.
So you are a private international citizen. If you look at the Internal Revenue Manual, here's a clue. It will say in there that the Internal Revenue Service only has to follow United States Supreme Court cases. So if you got a problem with the IRS and you start citing Smith versus Jones in the Fifth Circuit and Johnson versus Callowander in the 11th Circuit, you can't cite those cases, because those are the Internal Revenue Service coming after those people under private law for their private estate, and you don't have anything to do with that. The only thing you could use out of those cases is the principles that were used in the paperwork.
Exactly.
It's divide and conquer.
Yep. So the question always comes back. How does the average person wrap their minds around it? Look how many hours and decades those of us around this table tonight have spent studying this. And what we've got to do is to find ways to make it more palatable for the average person and to be able to start civics classes in our community, so that people can begin to grasp this information at a young enough age to be responsible for themselves. I think it's something that's been lacking in our educational model for quite some time now.
Well, you got three guys tonight on this call who have 60 years research experience plus between the
schools. And I just have to tell you, I'm no Lightfoot in it either. You know, when we get into it, that's what we do. And so that is a big part of what we're doing. So I'm going to be calling on y'all with some of the projects that we're working on as we're really putting together some of the e-learning platforms to help people. I'm just going to have a private conversation, and we're going to say, all right, you all, you know, how are we going to put this together in a way that the average person can begin to take this information and help themselves with it? Because that really is the goal. I think all of us would have that goal. You know, why else would we learn?
The biggest hump you have to get people over is getting out from in front of the television.
Exactly.
I'm serious. That is the worst thing that has ever happened to this
country.
And then
put the balls away too.
Yep. Google CIA mind control TV and see what happens. Yep.
There you go.
Oh yes. Oh yes. But you know, I'm finding that there are a lot of people who really do want to. It's like there is a mass awakening going on underneath that sometimes we're not aware of. And so it's our responsibility, those of us who have spent these decades of research, in being willing to do exactly what we're doing, sitting around and talking on this radio show so that people who want to get this information can get it.
And so I like it when other people go off on their own tangents, because at least I get an entirely different point of view.
Yes.
When they start researching in their own little niche, so to speak.
And it's
really enlightening for me, because then I go back and I say, oh, well, I see where this fits into what I've known. Where this fits into what someone else said. I see where it's all part of it.
Yep.
Yes.
It's all part of it.
And that's exactly what I saw tonight, because I can tell where you've been studying with Boris, and you've been able to take all this research. You and John both have done such a wonderful job of pulling all this together tonight that it's really been fun for me to sit in with the three of you and really just, you know, be a part of this conversation tonight.
The amount of detail that is out there that is so intricate, it's like... I call a nested subroutine. When you get into like legal words and definitions, it's like a definition within a definition within a definition, like those little Russian dolls, little wooden Russian dolls. That's what it's like. So you can't look at the exterior word without going to the definition and then finding another word lookup within that definition, and then another one from there, and that's where you really get the meat of what you're looking for. It's very well concealed.
Yes,
I don't happen to have it in front of me at the moment, but if you go back and you find online one of the old Bouvier's Law Dictionaries, look up the two Latin phrases that are on the frontispiece of his dictionaries, and it's like, it says something in Latin to the effect of, you know, this is something that's supposed to remain a mystery and the common man isn't supposed to know this.
Yeah.
Right on page one.
And you know what? We started for you to read that definition from the Minnesota statutes, and I don't think you ever actually got that on the radio show tonight. So I suggest before we end this broadcast that you read that. And Michael, we'd better be closing up here in about 5 more minutes. But I want that statute that you talked about, the birth certificate, on air tonight, if you would.
Okay, hang on till I find it again here.
Okay.
One other thing I'll say while he's looking for that, whenever we do get this world back together, one of the biggest cons in the whole thing has been constitutions. The Constitution, with the Declaration of Independence and Articles of Confederation. We did not have a con going on. It actually was through the Masonic influences, but that was one of the biggest things I see to get rid of and get rid of the back doors to where they could ever slip around again and this garbage would come to surface. It just needs to stomp it out and then put gallows up in front of the public building for them because they are trustees of the people.
There ain't enough wood.
Now, I ain't saying go after the wolves right now because these people are like people that work at a sewer pond. They go to work smelling like Coast soap. When they get off, they smell like crap. And it's the same way these guys go to work. The cops, I mean, I know these guys. I went to school with a lot of them. They're great people. They get into it, and then all of a sudden they say, what the hell have I got into?
Isn't it the truth? Just like you stopping going to lawyer school.
Yeah,
you know, when
they don't
you
have
realize.
Much choice.
Yeah.
That's why they have you work for an attorney. Whenever you go through school, they'll work for another attorney.
And then
look at how they do through this apprenticeship. Now, once they do figure it out, if they do figure it out early on, and they want to speak out about it, they can't because they can't speak out against their fellow brothers.
Right.
And if they do, their fellow brothers have enough dirt on them that, you know, they're sunk anyways. So that's why I don't trust anybody from that realm, you know.
No.
I mean, I guess I've just over the course of the years seen too many of the ones that say that they're going to help, say that they've changed sides. When it comes right down to the bottom line, they can't. Because of the prior oaths they've taken, and if they do, they're going to get squashed.
And their blood oaths.
That's right. So you know, they do think about it. They're young when they do these things.
They're kids.
You've also got Corpus Juris Secundum, Seventh Edition, Section 4, that says the duty of the attorney is to the courts.
To the courts.
So yes.
That was another reason I had quit. But
yes.
It's like you said,
fourth or fifth down the line.
They're private courts.
The client, all he's there for is to turn him upside down and shake his pockets loose.
Yep.
Have you found that?
Okay. Now I have it here. I will read it to you one last time.
All right. And y'all pay real close attention to this because those of you who always ask questions about the birth certificate, this is as well said as anything I've read.
You can probably do a Google search on this. This is Minnesota Court Rules, General Rules of Practice, Rule 220, Birth Certificates, quote, "The Registrar of Titles is authorized to receive for registration of memorials upon any outstanding certificate of title an official birth certificate pertaining to a registered owner named in said certificate of title, showing the date of birth of said registered owner, providing there is attached to said birth certificate an affidavit of an affiant who states that he or she is familiar with the facts recited, stating that the party named in said birth certificate is the same party as one of the owners named in said certificate of title, and that thereafter the registrar of titles shall treat said registered owner as having attained the age of majority at a date 18 years after the date of birth shown by said certificate." That's the end.
Okay. So that will make sense of what you were talking about, of the authenticating of that birth certificate so that people can go back and listen to that and begin to get some clues how you begin to establish your private status. That's not the whole thing,
but that begins to give you... That's just the first step.
That is the first step, but it begins to give you...
That's not even a step. That's the first... Let's not even call that a step, okay?
Yeah, it's the first understanding
how
this has been put upon you without people having an understanding, without them being told that there were things that they had to do to come back and occupy their position as a private person. However, it's so difficult because you have to watch the words so carefully.
Look at what's happening here. It's like Boris said, how is it that you can take in a birth certificate which does not identify you and is not supposed to be used for identification, and a social security number which does not identify you and is not supposed to be used for identification? It still says that on my original one. And you can take both those documents, go down to the DMV, and get a driver's license that is used for identification.
Now,
you're generally 16 years old when you get that. So if you go in there and register to vote when you're 18, aren't you still technically a minor?
Yes, according to that definition
that's the way I see it. That's the way I see it.
According to that definition that you just read, absolutely, until you complete that affidavit, then you are still considered to be outside the age of majority. Yes, no question about it.
No. There's way more. There's way more than that.
That's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, that's
now look what's happening in Ferguson with all these belligerent, unruly children on the streets. What do you think's going to happen to them if they start throwing rocks and bottles and getting out of line?
Papa government has to go in there and spank their little butts.
That's right.
Well, let's just hope that this is all part of their false flag and that the people won't fall for it. You know, that's a big part of the mind manipulation and everything, too. So let's just hope that people are watching their TVs and not paying as much attention, you know.
There have been some
benefits in some of it, you know. Yeah. We haven't had as much of an uprising in that manner, because that's never the answer. It has to come more in the peaceful means that we're talking about on this show. It can never come through adding more violence.
Fisticuffs isn't going to cure anything.
Fisticuffs never cured anything, and it never will.
Oh.
If you go out looking for trouble, it will find
you. It will always find you. And Michael, I know that Don is just about ready to take us out for this show tonight. It has been just absolutely a delight to be a part of the show with you fellas. And I have to say, we have to do it again. I'm not going to be on the show for the next couple of weeks because I have to get ready for the major series that we'll be doing starting the 21st of December. We'll be kicking off some really major things that we'll be doing with New Earth Nation. And then we have a 13-week series that is designed to give people more of the information like what we're talking about tonight, and also more information of what's going on behind the scenes so that people can begin to pull the veil of illusion out from under their eyes and just simply face the truth and decide what we are going to do about it, because it's the actions of each one of us that make a difference. So we're going to let Michael be, you know, a major co-host. We're just so glad to have him as a part of the Adventures into Sovereignty team. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more from John and Christopher as we go into the new year. So thank everybody for joining with us. And Michael is my very pleasant co-host. I hope you stay warmer tonight. Those of us are going to rub it in a little while.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm up where the air is fresh and clean. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me, Becky. It's been a pleasure. And thank you, Michael, for asking.
Always a pleasure, you fellas. And I guess with that, do you have any last words you'd like to say, John, before we'll get to close out the show?
No, because if I say anything, I'll talk forever. So I'll shut up.
We'll do it again, John.
That's pretty much what I was thinking. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to us tonight. And we hope to see you again here on Adventures in Sovereignty. And good night.
Yes, good night all.